Well, hi, everybody. This is Dave. I really appreciate the comments, the questions that you have sent in, and I promise to wrap the comments that I have or hopeful answers to your questions into the discussion. I'm going to go on lecture mode in just a moment to discuss some of your responses and questions before moving into our material, but before that, anything anyone wants to add or ask before we go on lecture mode? Well, thanks again for what you've sent in. It's very helpful and really useful to me to get an idea of what of this is really landing and what you'd like to further discuss for what's useful to you. So hold on, we're going to go on lecture mode. Okay, I'd like you just to listen to this brief overview to see if it makes sense and to consider how it fits with what you already believe as a coach. Much of our behavioral and emotional responses are automatic. Neuroscientists estimate that about 90 to 95% of our operating system is really unconscious, out of conscious awareness, focus, not logical, intellectual, or a focused decision, in other words. That means the vast majority of our responses are based on already established algorithms for behavioral, emotional, attachment patterns, the shadow story operating system that's on autopilot. Now, our lives are filled with these script patterns of how we respond to situations. As we repeat certain patterns, our brain wires those as a default mode. And the script for each scenario in our lives operates largely without having to think about it. So what I want to discuss in just a moment is to begin to look at a systematic way to understand those algorithms. It's a roadmap. That's the acronym for 7 steps of understanding how a story is put together and a way of listening to clients. So this is, you'll see how it's not about just asking the right questions, because the client wouldn't have the answers, or giving great information, because that's not the way our minds and brains work. So consider this just as a framework. What we specialize in as coaches is helping the client break the script, a change of their operating algorithms to move even one step away from a default mode initiates a process in the client's brain to initiate a new neural connection and pathway. And this is where neuroplasticity comes into play, the brain's ability to rewire itself, meaning that we strengthen what we focus on. Think about on a computer program. Each click shapes the next algorithm shown. What we next engage is not random, but selected and reinforced. Each click of the keyboard of our minds sends a tiny signal that says, more of this, please. And the more we interact with certain types of content, the less likely we'll encounter alternate perspectives. So what we click on or focus on shapes what we become interested in. So this means decision making is a developed core skill to engage systematically both the process and the specific decision outcomes. And part of decision making and initiating change then becomes an optimal stopping question. In other words, how long do you stay with something until you decide? There is even research on this, understanding optimal stopping situation? Like, how long do you consider getting information, considering things, and then make a decision? That's as true for hiring someone for your organization as it is perhaps retirement. So an ultimate process then in coaching is how to address the decision process itself as well as the end point. So that's just a bit of backdrop for what I want to discuss now, to look at the roadmap system. The roadmap is the acronym for seven steps to understand and address and perhaps even change the process of what we're doing. I want to use an example, since we should be talking about change and transition here. I want to use an example of a career transition. So the seven steps, the roadmap, is in your outline. And just listen to see if this makes sense to you. First step, recognize your career story. If you were to configure it as a shape, what would it be? A trajectory, a circle, a bell curve, a flat line? Clearly describe your career story as it exists now. Then, what you would want that career story to be. If someone wants to make a career change, are they fully informed about the one they're in now and wanting to leave? For example, if someone has only performed at 80 or 85% capacity, concluded that their job or career is not rewarding, then decide to move on, I don't believe they have the necessary information. They can't make an informed decision of what it's like to operate at 100% capacity. To do, in other words, an apples-to-apples comparison, they would need to function at 100% of their capacity in their current career to contrast it with the anticipation of 100% capacity in a new career. And it's likely that the same process that may have resulted in a ceiling at 80% would be repeated in the new situation. So here's a question for that. At what percent of your capacity are you functioning in your work now? I'm still amazed when I ask someone that, they don't have to think about it. They don't have to find, they immediately have a figure. Boom, 70%, 85%. So if it's not 100%, explore why. That's your immediate coachable moment. Have you ever performed at 100% of your capacity? Do you know what it's like to be fully successful at your current or past position so that you can make an informed decision? Here's a brief story to illustrate. At the beginning, this is way back, at the beginning of my career as a psychiatrist, for a small part of my professional time at Baylor College of Medicine, I served as a consultant for the Institute of Rehabilitation and Research. A small part of time as a consultant, but I was privileged to work with people who had become physically disabled in adolescence or adulthood, often as the result of an accident. And not surprisingly, some of these individuals considered suicide as an alternate to a lifetime of disability. So instead of trying to convince them not to kill themselves or considering it depression, I indicated that I could understand their feelings about the overwhelming change in their life. Suicide was at least one way they could control something about their life, especially when fundamental body control was out of reach. I recognized that at that moment, the idea of suicide, of being able to control one thing in their lives, to know that they could end the pain, was the hope that paradoxically allowed them to keep living. They needed that choice. I recommended that we work together to achieve their full capacity now, recognizing that this would be at a different level since the onset of disability. And only by achieving their full potential at the new level, could they make an informed decision about whether they truly wanted to live or not live as a physically challenged individual. I told them that I would entirely understand if, after achieving full capacity and then being able to make an informed decision, that if they decided to die, I would respect that situation and decision and be there. Thankfully, after working with a few hundred people over a period of 5 years, no one decided to die after going through full physical and emotional rehabilitation and achieving a new, though different, level of function. Step two, own your career story, especially needs and ideals. Be clear about needs and ideals, if and how they align with your passion and your experience. When your passion and expertise combine, terrific possibilities occur. So a question for this step: what do you want in your career? And listen for whether your client is getting away from something or going towards something, or maybe rarely both. Distinguish temporary frustration from permanent dissatisfaction. Be cautious about confusing dissatisfaction, disillusionment, or even burnout with terminal disillusionment. Before you can distinguish temporary from permanent, you may need to realign or recommit to your career to get to 100%. Keep in mind that choosing the wrong career may be every bit as easy as it was the first time if you chose the wrong career then. One client spoke of a particular storyline that she had endorsed, really bought into. She was not addicted to work itself or to money or the things that money bought, but she recognized that she was addicted to the pursuit of perfection, her work ethic. More became a goal, and it was measured by more money, more work. The story of the pursuit of money had become a substitute for other stories because it was a way to measure, to keep track. The ideal of more, of course, lacked an endpoint, so her self-esteem was never validated. She had become exhausted with a perpetual series of occasions for hope of being perfect, but never quite getting there. Now, hold that in mind. I'm going to return to her situation in just a moment. Step three, assess your career story. And remember, any story here can be substituted. We're just looking at career story. We're talking about wellness story, life story, whatever it is, we're sticking with career story. Now, a belief or a fact is an anatomical reality in the brain, a physical part of a neuronal network. And you know this from working with clients. A teacher can't present a simple explanation and remove an existing neural network from the student's brain. You can't just list the three reasons an idea is wrong or right and expect it's going to rearrange somebody's neural networks and pathways. Or that presenting a new fact will overwrite the one that's already there. But change can occur. It's a process, not an event. It's an inside job. So this step is to assess beliefs to see if they're limiting or if they need to be replaced with other beliefs or other aspects. So these are for you as a coach first. What's another way to look at this? How might your thoughts be limiting you? Who may have a different perspective on this? Are there questions I'm afraid to ask? And remember, at some level, you'll know what they are because denial is a powerful engagement, just like a secret is. What do I really want? What do I need to let go of? What is present and what is missing in a current career? What information do you need? Research new information, maybe regarding personal skills, abilities, aptitudes. So some questions here for this step. What would your career and life be like if you already had what you wanted? What is it costing you personally and financially to not have what you want and do what you need to do? And here, distinguishing internal dissatisfaction from job or career dissatisfaction can be important. Internal struggles and unhappiness are often blamed on a job, just like a marriage. People want to change the obvious external focus rather than to look inside. Sometimes people even create job-related struggles to externalize unhappiness or conflict in an attempt to escape or to pose a recognizable remedy. Then, the supposed way to get rid of the problem is to leave it. In psychoanalysis, that's called projective identification. In fact, a very wise person many centuries ago, Marx, said, blame someone what you're most guilty of. Step 4, decide on a plan and how to make it work. So here, align needs and ideals with purpose and passion, refocused on a goal. You decide where you can make the greatest contribution. You want to stay informed and engaged at whatever you do, although it may be different from what you had done for 3 or 4 decades. It means that you will examine again your fundamental strengths, your needs and ideals. Perhaps for the first time, you'll be self-directed, self-organized, no corporate structure or job to fit into and govern your day. You'll need to cultivate a deep understanding of yourself, your strengths, your weaknesses, how you learn, how you work with others, and especially where you can make the greatest contribution. So, a question here to the client. How would working with me help you with where you want to be? Now, to return to that client of mine pursuing perfection, her medical practice was booming, yet she wasn't enjoying it or feeling fulfilled at all, and she was tired, only looking to the next task to do it perfectly. It highlighted a pattern that I noticed. It seemed that as soon as she began even slightly enjoying her work, really immersed in it, she began procrastinating. She would put off completing a specific aspect of work, like doing medical records, which reinstated her old feeling of dread and vague guilt about what she should be doing. When I wondered out loud about this pattern, sort of highlighted it, she recognized it. It prompted her insight. She said, work always needed to be work. The minute I began to feel pleasure at work, I began to feel vaguely guilty because I should be working. And she recognized a pattern from earliest childhood that she was continuing and recognized that if she continues it, that's a choice. That's the default mode, but she has a decision point. And she began to work on it and is tremendously enjoying her practice now. Just as a sidebar here, something that you will encounter as a coach are decisions that people make which are new or even unprecedented. Decisions that they have no model for, no internal models to simulate a new way of thinking about things. And even in unprecedented situations, intuition can misinform, because intuition is based on from working models to simulate a response at a subliminal level and get to intuition. So that can even misinform. We can come back to that and discuss that further, but wanted to highlight that because we usually ask in what kind of situation has been, what's the closest to this decision you're making right now or this experience? Has there been a time that you successfully dealt with something very much like this? So our specialty really is about change and transition. Our subspecialty is co-creating systems. With a system, you have a map, and each step is specific, finite, and can be very rewarding. Step 5, map a new career story. When, where, how to begin, SMART goals, initiatives, next best action, and navigate with the brain's error detection mechanism. Our brains create patterns of connections in our ongoing search for meaning. These patterns, or mental maps, relate to our ability to plan and predict the future. Discomfort and uncertainty begin any significant journey. Every client, we've discussed this briefly before, every time your client takes a step into the new or different or unknown, every time they break the script, there's going to be an attendant discomfort or uncertainty. And this is what we can help our clients reframe as validation that they're moving ahead so that with their self-reflection and self-monitoring, they can interpret this correctly as moving ahead rather than as an indication that something's off or something's not normal. When our predictions get confirmed repeatedly, patterns become hardwired and automatic. Then we notice something that may not fit into that predicted pattern. The error detection mechanism in the brain functions to compare input with what's expected, with the default mode. A mismatch creates a disruption in the expected order of things. So this error detection mechanism, an actual location in the brain, explains a number of things that are dynamic factors. We notice differences more easily than confirmation. So it becomes easier to focus on the things we do wrong and struggle with recognizing our strengths. If advice is unfamiliar or unwanted, it sets off this error detection response, meaning that somebody can reject an idea before consideration, and that places another barrier to resist change. And this is also why telling a client what to do or giving advice or directives or even disguising it in the form of a choice put in the form of a multiple choice possibility, that may, each of those may trigger the error detection mechanism. Focus on problems energizes because it activates this error detection mechanism. Bad news gets our attention for the same reason. So the mental maps that were tailor-made for a certain context in our lives, such as stress or aspects of childhood, may simply not apply in usual situations. The hardwiring is not permanent, and it can be revised. When changes occur in a systematic and consistent way, which is our job description as coaches, this collaborative, contingent conversation creates new connections in the brain. New maps are created. The brain's error detection mechanism can be used as part of a powerful internal navigation system. Choice architecture, exactly what we do and what we focus on as coaches, is an art and a science. We focus on right now this decision, this focus for our client, not abstract, not way into the future, but a next step. People can be nudged toward decisions that will improve their lives in healthy and wealthy direction, but they have to decide, they have to know the next step and engage it. We're susceptible to biases that can lead us to make decisions that are unhealthy, uneconomical, short-sighted. This is part of what we're listening for as coaches. We're listening for the automatic way of creating a story. And when we hear something that doesn't make sense, we hopefully get curious about it together. When we consider how people think, we can design a way of creating a collaborative alliance that someone can consider what their best options are rather than doing it automatically. When a client knows that we have their best interest at heart and that we're in that collaborative alliance, they will not hear you as judgmental or critical or pejorative, but as engaged with them, focused from their experience to the best what's next and then what's after what's next. Step 6, author changes. Implement the plan. Someone needs the correct paradigm. Changing careers can mean changing paradigms. A mistake of extrapolation would be to assume that the present experience would simply apply in a new career. You just change the setting. Even if you go from the head of HR at one mid-size multinational oil company to another in the same city, the culture can be worlds apart. That's a direct example from coaching clients. The correct paradigm would be about not only the process, but the content of the new career and the process of change itself and the cultural setting for this and the engagement, the engagements that are co-created. Assumptions within a paradigm need to be examined for correctness. For example, in making a transition from my medical practice and deciding on an early retirement after 25 years, to professional coaching, I assumed getting clients would be similar to getting therapy and analytic patients. For me, it was to share my work and thinking, to occasionally present a paper or write a book, and my receptionists would take the calls, put patients on the schedule or the waiting list. Well, wrong for coaching. You guys know that already. Coaching is a profession, but it's also a business. And marketing is a world of difference. And my mentor coach drugged me kicking and screaming into this transition and even into marketing. So a question here may be, who else needs to be involved in your plan? And I would strongly urge you, as I have done a number of four times, engage a mentor coach when you're going through a transition. It can expedite things. It can make it much easier, much more effective and successful, I believe. Step 7, program new experiences to then incorporate them into your identity. Both the change and the transition, as we discussed in the first seminar, involves changing, evolving a core identity. This is what makes change permanent. When your operating system, fundamentally the bedrock of your identity, evolves along with those changes to make them part of how and who you are and what you do. Your identity is the story you tell yourself about yourself, what you're willing to consider even, what you'll do, what you won't do. Identity is a set of beliefs that relate to who you are as a person, as well as what you do, what you engage. When changes don't last, usually it's because someone has not evolved their identity, changed their operating system to incorporate and transform the changes into the new operating system. When there is a shift of identity, it becomes permanent. The strongest force in the human psyche is the need to remain consistent with our own identity, our identification of ourselves, not what I do, but who I am. We stay consistent with our own personal definition, whatever it is. So let's go back to looking at operating systems. Behavioral patterns and belief systems downloaded especially, even from early on, from parents, the first years of life, become automatic and operate without observation or awareness. Neuroscientists estimate that about 95% of our behaviors, core beliefs, are programmed in our unconscious mind and operate on autopilot. This is one of the things we listen for in our clients. And as we've talked before, you don't need to go back into the history to look at what the dynamics or the earlier issues are. Every algorithm that is important to that client and operates currently will manifest in the relationship with you, the coach. And this is one of the things that we're listening for, not just the content, but the process. So here's a couple of examples. We create two stories simultaneously at times. Maybe they even go in the opposite direction. An example, the surface story. I want to generate more income and create wealth. The shadow story that ghostwrites that behavior may or may not be conscious. Well, I don't think I have what it takes. Or what if I tried really hard and then failed and got embarrassed? Or I don't believe I can make really big money. Another simple example. I want to claim my freedom and become my own authority, my own person. That's the stated. The unstated is, well, you know, I really can't have total authority because my partner acts like I'm taking it away if I do that. Or I just have to go along with certain decisions, not make my own decisions. Mentor coaching requires us to be insightful, reflective, self-observant, to have mindfulness of ourselves in order to be empathically attuned to the mind and experience of a client. So considerations of a career may need to be considered in conjunction with developmental phases of the individual within that career, as well as where the individual is in life development. Let me elaborate just a little bit more about that. Needs and ideals, the fundamental core of our identity, need to be considered in terms of a life phase. Now, needs can change and evolve. Ideals, our core values, tend not to change, but I think it's helpful to know both for a client. That's why when I began almost every client in mentor coaching, I ask them to do the needs and ideals exercise. It only takes 10 or 15 minutes. It's in your outline for both of us to get an idea of what their needs and their ideals are. So the developmental issues in the foreground in a certain life phase may determine how someone views a career or the challenges or the desire to change careers. Things evolve developmentally, both with an individual and with an individual in context, especially of career, life phase, and where someone is in regard to this. So an ongoing assessment for working with a client, once a plan is put into action, we can do some things with a client to actively follow and track that, to monitor choices, to question ideas, to probe reasoning, and to ask clearly and honestly, does it work? This is an essential aspect of what we're doing with a client to help them develop self-awareness and self-reflection, to be able to be more empathically attuned to themselves, to be subjectively and objectively aware of themselves, how they're thinking and feeling, and to look at that in a way to really understand it instead of making it just automatic as the way things are. So here's some mentor coaching applications to translate what we're talking about now, in one way at least, into our mentor coaching. Challenge your mindset. For example, every task can be seen as a potentially improvable skill, how you can get better rather than having just doing it or getting it done. Approach work with new perspectives. Think more simply, more abstractly, deeper, more synthetically. Think long term. This might include the place of your work in the system of your life, not just as a job, but as its own developmental course. Get feedback maybe from other sources, multiple sources, including outside your field. And do these approaches consistently. This is one of the things that discerns and distinguishes super achievers. Now, here's a kind of gimmicky thing, but something to possibly think about. A picture or a scene from the not-too-distant future can perhaps show specifically what's possible. This application of visualization, kind of like a destination postcard, is a short-term vision, a way station toward an ultimate destination or an ultimate vision. It can offer specificity to the belief of arriving and provides hope with a destination that's not so far off in the future. Remember the two questions, the travel agent question of how your brain works. Where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? Programming your brain can have both short-term and long-term destinations. So a destination postcard can be an interim goal in the process of getting to your ultimate visualization. So here are some things we may want to think about as a catalyst in working with our client. Script the critical moves initially for that destination, one step at a time. Make the changes consistent with identity and recognize how identity evolves with the changes. Both are interwoven. Focus on the next step. That should be the first here. Build habits to optimize efficiency. In other words, look at creating a system, just like you do when you began a session with a coaching client. You establish a map, most likely. What would you like us to focus on? What would you like us to get to at the end of the session? It's two separate questions. That's the map that allows you to track and measure progress with the client. Build habits to optimize efficiency. Visualize, perhaps, especially if you're a visual person, the entire experience of successful arrival, or at least know exactly what arrival will be, where it is, what it looks like. So here are some aspects to engineer more effectiveness. So let's just review some essentials of how we can help a client engineer effective change. Focus specifically on the next step. Here's an example. Terry Fox started the Marathon of Hope. It's a cross-Canada run of 3,339 miles. Because he had an artificial leg, his running style was a shuffle and a hop. He managed, though, to average 24 miles a day, completed the run in 143 days. Immediately after he finished, he was interviewed and asked, with your challenge, how in the world did you keep going through those thousands of miles? He said, I just kept going to the next telephone pole. And he did that for 3,339 miles. He knew where the telephone poles ended, or where they were, the Marathon of Hope, and the telephone poles converged to the end of that. Two, specify the next step. Not abstract or global. Some is not a number. Soon is not a time. Act healthier is not a strategy. Three, make changes tangible and concrete. Construct, co-create a yardstick with your client or a map to determine how they can measure progress. This will be a part of what's internalized, that they can sustain the work all the time that you're not together until you meet again. And with a map, you can tell what's detour and what's distraction. Make progress measurable. Demystify a journey, a specific destination with a tangible focus on the next step. Make progress visible, small, specific, attainable milestones that are visible, and with celebration of each small victory. This is part of the empathic resonance we have with a client to really give voice to or resonate with their sense of effectiveness or their excitement about what they've done that's positive. One of the best examples of shrinking a task to a tangible next step is Alcoholics Anonymous, challenging its members to one day at a time. It shrinks the change to a manageable, foreseeable, specific action. A small target leads to small victories. The cumulative experience, then, of effectiveness and mastery. And here's the secret of life, guys. I want you to be ready. All you ever have to do is the next right thing. This shrinks the change to an immediate step of effectiveness and the experience of mastery and momentum. We've just adopted in this discussion the scientific method to examine, to measure, to test, to consider change. The scientific method is a challenge to create a mindset of inquiry objectively, generates discomfort, but it also catalyzes growth. So here are 12 AAA principles of change to author a transition story. The AAA, awareness, acceptance, action. One, you're writing your own story. Is it working? For each component, what are the results? Honestly assess each storyline with the question, is it working? And make that a yes or no. Your personal wellness story, mind, body, spirit. Your business or career story. Your relationship story. Your money story. A not-so-secret to success is you have to pay in full for that success. So you might as well find out what the price is, pay it in full, pay it as soon as possible, and then enjoy the benefits of success. The price is always some form of energy, whether that energy is money, time, work, or experience. If you get something for which you haven't provided value or benefit, you still have to pay in some way. Here's another non-secret. People who truly enjoy getting what they want are those who find a way to enjoy paying the price, to enjoy the process. I'm doing it right now. I love this. And I believe it can really make a difference in your lives and for your clients. That makes it so easy to do, exciting, The price is whatever you need to give in order to generate exactly what you want. Two, you're writing your own story. It takes just as much energy to create any belief in your story. Think about that. Positive or negative, past, present, future, adaptive or maladaptive, the same energy. The belief of scarcity takes just as much energy as the belief of abundance. You generate the energy and give power to that story. Simple math says that when you use your attention to focus on what you don't have, you deplete your energy to engage what you do have and what you want. Here's the subtle but crucial distinction. You give specific power to your story, and it assumes a momentum and power of its own. And remember, you're not the subject of that process. You're the creator of it, the author of it. Now, here's a short list of some results when you focus on what you don't want. Fear, anxiety, anger, confusion, annoyance, helplessness, guilt. Three, you're writing your own story. Decide specifically what you want. The primary reason people don't get what they want is usually they're not quite sure of what they want. Here's a neuroscience law of attraction question. Again, you've heard this, I'm repeating it. How does the brain work like a travel agent? First two questions a travel agent asks, where do you want to go? When do you want to get there? So a goal is like MapQuest. You program where you want to go, and then you create a map to get there. Now, a caveat here is to know what not to do can at times be at least as important as knowing what to do. And I'm borrowing this from back in the day when I had a service on the alcohol treatment unit. One of my favorite people, an old codger who was a counselor there, gave me permission to use this because he would use it in such perfect timing. He would say, you know, you may not always know what the next right thing is, but you're damn sure going to know what it is. So I credit him, and I pass it on. What you resist, you draw toward you. Resistance is an engagement. It's analogous to saying anger is as passionate an attachment as love. So, one application, if you find yourself resisting change, it's already occurred. You're engaging it. And most suffering is the result of resisting what already is. People resist going to the doctor. They aren't afraid of doctors. They're afraid their denial is going to be confronted. Four, you're writing your own story. Do you have specific measurable goals? An initial classic study, and you've probably heard of this, in this arena, is a Harvard study begun in the mid-1950s. 10 to 15% of the Harvard Business School graduates fashioned a vision and specific goals for their life in business. 5 decades later, that 10 to 15% had over 90% of the assets of the entire group, Harvard Business. Same study, or same findings, roughly, from a Dartmouth study. Motivation increases as soon as you're clear about the goal and the payoff. Focus enhances when you have a specific plan and strategy. Now, it's estimated that less than 10% of people have measurable goals, specific measurable goals. Almost 100% of people have good ideas, at least some. The difference between a good idea and a goal, measurement and time, where and when, the travel agent question. Here's a good idea. I'd like to lose weight. Here's a goal. I will reach 185 pounds by 5 p.m. October 1st, 2025. Here's a good idea. I want to save more money for retirement. Here's a plan. I will set up an automatic transfer of $300 from my checking account to my retirement fund the first day of each month from now on. Oh, a single decision that you don't have to make again, but it can make a major difference. Then consider this, and I ask all of you who have done training with me and gotten to the, which is everybody, to the final class when we talk about plans and projection and goals for your practice, and I ask for a stretch goal, a breakthrough goal, something that would stretch you, bring incredible opportunities, move you to a higher level, quantum leap, getting a book on the New York Times bestseller list, spending every March skiing in Steamboat. Now, you'll have to substitute your own goals there. Spending every October writing in a quiet French Quarter courtyard. But your own goals now. Okay, enough about me. Then reread your goals, regular and breakthrough, twice a day, when you wake up and when you go to bed. 5, you're writing your own story. Small changes lead to big changes. Issues that may seem overwhelmingly large and insurmountable can be approached by looking at the simplicity of the issue to specify a step to take for progress. So divide up your work. Focus on and complete one thing. What's the first step you're going to do right now? There's always something you can focus on. Just go to the next telephone pole. 6, you're writing your own story. Be consistent in your pursuit of goals. It takes about 20 to 25 days to etch a new pathway in your brain to make a habit, a simple habit, permanent. Write your story consistently for it to become the default mode. Now, the difference between a genius idea and a true story of success, not just 10,000 hours of dedicated work to develop mastery, but deliberate practice informed by performance neuroscience. That's exactly what we're talking about right now. And guess who said this? It's not that I'm so smart. It's just that I stay with problems longer. That was Albert Einstein. 7, you're writing your own story. The benefit of doing more of what's working and less of what isn't will become evident and self-perpetuating. Now, this is all very simple. Good parents have known this for centuries. Sometimes it just takes human science and cognitive research to remind us of the obvious. The caveat, you have to take action to diminish pre-programmed responses and write a new script one step at a time for the new experience. A new story has to replace the old one, and there are no shortcuts since long-term change requires consistent practice, repetition, to groove new neuronal pathways and establish new neural networks. But there are effective and efficient methods to accelerate optimum change and ensure transformation. That's, I would guess, exactly why you signed up for this, and I hope that we're answering it for you with your application. 8, you're writing your own story. Ask for feedback to your partner. On a scale of 1 to 10, rate the quality of our relationship. Now, you better be ready for direct feedback. But to your employees or colleagues, on a scale of 1 to 10, how am I doing? And then, how can I get to 10? A tribe in southern Africa called the Babemba has an interesting practice. When they hear a story of a person doing something wrong, something that really destroys the social net of their tight community, all work in the village halts. The people gather around the offender and one by one recite all that that person has done right in their life. Good deeds, responsible behavior, thoughtful acts. This honest feedback on misbehavior has a time-honored consequence to allow the person to reclaim the better part of themselves. They remember who they are, why they're important to the life of the village. Think about that with your adolescent child next time. This may have been the original 360-degree feedback. Even with this kind of social network and feedback, we can relax and remember our way back into alignment with our true self. We can get centered and reconnect with our true essence. So, now here's a sidebar, and we've only gone through 8 of these. You may have noticed that each of these AAA principles of change to author a new story begins the same way. You're writing your own story. That's the first 4 steps of the roadmap. Recognize, observe, assess, decide. Compressed into the shorthand of awareness and acceptance. The third A, mapping change and authoring new experiences in these 12 action steps. 9, you're writing your own story. Get success insurance instead of waiting for good luck. Luck is defined as probability taken personally, which is to say narcissism meets chance. So one of the things to look at in your in the outline is the piece I put in there, the work tool on success insurance. And that's coming directly from a well-known business coach. 10, you're writing your own story. Take a chance. You didn't have a New York Times bestseller before you sent your manuscript to an agent. If you get rejected, you still don't. What do you got to lose? What's the problem? You spent your whole life not having a New York Times bestseller. Go big or go home. A young chiropractor just out of professional school wanted to open a practice in Carmel, California. He was told he'd never make it. There's already one chiropractor for every 40 people. So he went to 12,500 homes, talked to 6,500 people, asked 3 questions. Which location should I open my office, the north or west side of town? Should I have extra office hours between 9 and 7 in the morning or 5 to 7 in the afternoon? And which newspaper should I advertise in? And then he added, when he left, when I have an open house party, would you like an invitation? In his first month, he took in $72,500, and in his first year, he netted over $1 million. 11, you're writing your own story. It's never too late to start. So don't let conventional wisdom or limiting assumptions ghostwrite your story. Cliff Beon was a 61-year-old Australian sheepherder. He heard about a cross-country race from Sydney to Melbourne and decided to enter. He showed up in Oshkosh overalls and work boots. The officials looked at him and like he was crazy, and they said, this is a race of over 800 kilos, the most seasoned runners in the world compete. Do you have any running experience and equipment? He said, yeah, I run after my sheep every day, and I got these boots and this baseball cap. So, when the race began, the world-class runners took off as they were trained to begin. Cliff started shuffling along in his boots. Well, you're supposed to run 18 hours and sleep 6 for those days. But nobody told Cliff this, so when the other runners were sleeping, he just kept shuffling along. And they were asleep and couldn't tell him he wasn't supposed to. He shuffled along for over 3 days. He cut 5.5 hours off the world record. So we each have beliefs that limit us. Find the story that will improve you and start believing that. So if there were no barriers, what would your ideal life be? And now finally, number 12, you're writing your own story. Everything is okay in the end. If it's not okay, it's not the end. Ed Lorenz conceptualized chaos theory in the 1960s in this way. The initial state of events may seem unrelated and random, but eventually a pattern emerges. And in the end, all the pieces fit together. It's the study of phenomena that may appear random, but in fact have an element of regularity, which can be described eventually using a different organizing perspective. In the end, all the pieces fit together. And that's what we're listening for while our clients are talking about all the things that they present, all the content, and the process that we're listening for. Well, we're out of time and don't have time to add for any discussion or question. I welcome any questions or comments or anything you'd like to add or ask in an email, and we'll pick up right here next time for our final seminar. So be sure, anything you'd like to add, ask, or suggest, send it to me in an email, and I appreciate the responses of all of you who have done that. Thanks very much. Take care of yourself. Have a great week.